Laskavo prosimo, це подкаст Нейроклініка.
Welcome to the Neuroclinic. We have a very special episode for you today, and we welcome Nadia Rechan from Ukraine, who is now qualified as a clinical psychologist, talking about her work in clinical neuropsychology in the context of the war in Ukraine. We're also joined by Alistair Teager, who was deployed on behalf of the World Health Organization to work alongside colleagues in Ukraine, and also by Marina Minsikovska, who is a Ukrainian translator. I should add a small but guilty editorial note that this recording actually took place in December 2023, but due to the complexity of editing the translated material, I'm afraid the recording and subsequent edit took me some time.
So welcome to the Neuroclinic. Cleena, we're here again.
We are. Hi, Ingram. I'm Cleena Carroll.
And I'm Ingram Wright. So we have some very special guests here today. We have Nadia joining us from Ukraine, who's about to be a clinical psychologist. She qualifies tomorrow, we understand, but she's going to introduce herself in a minute. We have Marina translating with obvious expertise into Ukrainian, and Alistair Teager. So this is going to require some choreography, Cleena. When we're getting better at this, but there'll be the odd stepping on each other's toes, but we're going to try and minimize that and hopefully have a really interesting conversation. So we usually in the Neuroclinic, we ask people to introduce themselves. So Nadia, do you want to go first?
Доброго дня всім присутнім і тим, хто буде слухати нас.
Hello, to those who are present here and to the audience as well. My name is Nadia Rechun. I live in Ukraine in the city of Rivne. For a year now, I've been working at the National Neurotrauma Rehabilitation Center.
Welcome, Nadia.
Welcome, Nadia. And Alistair.
Yes, thanks for having me on again, Ingram. So I'm Alistair Teager, consultant clinical neuropsychologist. I work in the NHS at Manchester Centre for Clinical Neurosciences at Salford Royal. But more recently, sort of this past year, I've been working a little bit for the World Health Organization, including a deployment or mission to Ukraine to support the National Rehabilitation Centre.
Thanks, Alistair, and welcome.
Thank you.
And Marina, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Marina Mintakovska. I'm an interpreter. I'm helping rendering Nadia's replies into English and back and forth into Ukrainian today.
Thank you, Marina. Alistair, I think we were going to start with you. I mean, we obviously, as usual, we've kind of sketched out a bit of a plan for our conversation. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about the context for the work, the mission in Ukraine.
Yeah, I suppose also the terminology, you know, is very interesting for me to be deployed on a mission. It's very different terminology for the World Health Organization. But I have some experience in neuro rehab, spinal cord injury, major trauma, major incidents. And with the, I suppose, the escalation of the war last February, there was increased injuries, and the World Health Organization tried to gather together a team of international experts or MDT professionals to go out to Ukraine to help develop the service that Nadia works in, upskill the staff, and I suppose just try and support the humanitarian effort. So yeah, over the course of about 4 or 5 months, I was out there for 2 months working with Nadia, her psychology colleagues, and also the other members of the MDT.
That sounds really unusual, Alistair, like it's almost like a call to service. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, working with the World Health Organization and, you know, kind of that cross work and kind of between services.
Yeah, I think as with any massive organization, there's lots of do's and don't do's. I think there's lots of safety things that had to be done. There's lots of people you're communicating with around the world. So think about time zones and languages. You talk about cultural elements of working with your colleagues, but also with the team you're out there working with. There's also logistics. You know, it would take me 2 or 3 days to get from my house in Chester out to Rivne, where Nadia and the team are based. And that's because you can't fly into Ukraine. You have to go through a border and you can't travel at night and all sorts. So there's a lot of stuff from that side of things. So, yeah, hopefully that sort of gives you a little bit of context of that. I think it's really interesting as well. You know, it was really nice to have psychology and neuropsychology involved because there's a significant amount of medical presence, nursing, OT, physio. But I think, as Nadia will talk a bit about later, the need for psychology in these settings is very apparent. And I think it's very difficult at times for us to deploy a psychologist. I don't know how many people would be able to or willing to go into that sort of situation.
And I guess it's, you know, we'll probably speak more about neuropsychology in a bit, won't we? But I guess neuropsychology has a long history with war and, you know, the development of neuropsychology. A lot of the principles that we use, a lot of the evidence base actually comes from war settings. You know, if we think about things like Stanford Bean AIQ test that came out of World War One, you know, we've got all of that work of like Luria, you know, after the Second World War, and thinking about cognitive rehabilitation and kind of that therapeutic milieu. And then the work I can always get his name the wrong way around, Yehuda Ben Yishai, following the Yom Kippur War. And I guess, you know, we're really conscious as well of the current war in kind of Israel and Palestine and the occupied territories as well. You know, we have that very long history, don't we, with neuropsychology during war. I wonder, you know, if you or Nadia could speak a little bit to that idea of, you know, the challenges of working during war.
I was just going to say, I'll leave that to Nadia to talk about, because I can talk about it from a British person going out to Ukraine, but I think Nadia's experience would be far more valuable.
Дякую за запитання.
Thank you for your question. Yes, it's true that new research in neuropsychology and psychology was rapidly developing after various conflicts and war across the world, and it was the basis for our knowledge in this field. As regards current situation in Ukraine, previous research does help us because we lean on it in our adaptation and in our approaches to how to treat people. So it helps us lay out a certain course of action. But of course, there are new challenges for which we haven't found the solutions yet, because some of the conditions that we see in our population were not described in any research or in any papers. There are new kinds of weaponry being used at the battlefield at the moment that lead to new impairments. So there's no clear-cut solution for them yet.
Так, звісно, ви стикаєтесь, мабуть, з новими типами уражень, але я думаю, те, як вам, як людині, а коли ви з одного боку намагаєтеся допомогти іншим людям, перебуваючи у небезпеці водночас, ви і вашу родину, я маю на увазі, звісно.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about, isn't there? Even in that, you know, the differences between the types of injuries that you might see, and I guess thinking about what it's like as a human being to be trying to support other people whilst actually you and your family are impacted as well.
Так, дійсно, це не є простим, адже
It's not very easy indeed. I'm 29 years old and I've never lived in a war situation before. Not to say that I've never worked as a psychologist with the servicemen and with the civilians in the war setting. So part of my family are also in the military. So yeah, sometimes it's hard. But there are things that help. For example, support from my colleagues who ended up in the same situation as I. And what we do, we talk a lot about our experience between ourselves, we support ourselves. Another helping factor is supervision. If you get supervision from prominent Ukrainian professionals or international professionals, so that's helpful as well. And also having faith, standing together, united as one, as a nation. And I think one of the supports that I lean on is my internal resources, my skills, my knowledge, my expertise.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit, Nadia, about how things maybe have changed from, you know, the beginning in February of last year. You know, this has been going on a huge amount of time now to now, you know, have some of those supports shifted and changed over time.
So first it should be noted that I became a professional in November 2022. That is when the war has already started. And the war partly motivated me to become a psychologist due to a very high demand for this type of work now. Second, coming back to your actual question, at first people were extremely confused, afraid, panicking, but now the situation has changed. I think there's more awareness now generally on what to do and how to behave in case of a missile strike or a missile attack or a shelling, or what to do if somebody's having an acute emotional reaction to things. Also, first aid is something people know a lot better now. So I'm guessing the general level of awareness now about what's happening in the country, about what's happening in the cities, is much, much higher now. And so is critical thinking, I believe.
It's really interesting to hear that. Thank you.
Nadia, you talked about how you've had to face different kinds of injuries, different patterns of injuries, different forms of psychological challenge. I suppose I also wondered how much of the work is continuing with the ordinary work, the work that you would have done in any event. Individuals who are having strokes and other forms of psychological challenges presumably go on as usual alongside the war. Have you a sense of there being a balance between those ordinary psychological challenges and the new challenges brought upon by the war?
Дякую за запитання. В моєму досвіді
Thank you for your question. And 95% of people with whom I work are servicemen. These are either people in the military who are in the active service but have been wounded and thus were forwarded to the hospitals to recover. Some of them will not be returning to the front line because of the injuries that they have. And some smaller part of the population would be the civilians who have injuries resulting from their falling from heights or jumping into the bodies of water or just being in a motor traffic accident. And I can also add that some of the people we're treating are civilians that were affected as a result of war going on. For example, people who got their injuries because a missile hit a pumping tank station that they were at the time, and they and that's how they were injured. So we treat those patients too.
Thank you, Nadine. Alistair.
Yeah, I suppose to think about the wider context as well, from my side, some of the things that were really interesting were thinking about where the war is taking place. So you've got a huge geographical area in Ukraine where people have been displaced or there's fighting going on. So some of the things that really struck me were access to services, access to medications, access to doctors. You know, some of the WHO and other sort of charitable and humanitarian organizations is just about getting medications to people who need them. So if you think about people who are at risk of stroke, people who have epilepsy, people who have anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, they may not be able to get their treatment. And similarly, if you know, a lot of the servicemen and the patients that Nadia and the team see, they've been displaced. They might not be able to be discharged home. And the families have had to move thousands of miles to support physically, emotionally, and then what happens next. And I suppose just as a wider systemic issue, another thing that really struck me, thinking about from a developmental perspective, is that when there is an air raid warning or missiles in the air, the sirens go off, schools shut. So kids have to get picked up and taken out. So there's a whole generation that are not necessarily going to get access to education in the same way. And how's that going to affect things?
And I think it's, I'm actually feeling quite emotional having this conversation. And I think part of that is, you know, we've seen so much in the media about Ukraine and the war in Ukraine. And, you know, on a human level, there's that real sense of empathy with people, but also this sense of not really knowing what it's like. I was in Tel Aviv on the 7th of October when Hamas missile strikes struck, and it was terrifying. But I still remember that sense in the airport of leaving on the Monday afterwards, of just feeling really guilty because I was leaving. And I was leaving an entire people who, you know, where war was starting. And that sense of guilt, but also a massive sense of relief. And I think, you know, I wonder, Ingram, Alistair, if you could speak a little bit about what that was like for you in terms of stepping into a war zone and leaving again.
Yeah, it's a really difficult question. I suppose I probably had a mentality that I was going in and then coming out and going in and then coming out, because I was effectively doing 2 weeks at a time. And I suppose I think there's never been a sense that I've done as much as I could. It's always been a case of I've got a job remit to do. I'll try and do that. I think what was really, I suppose as a counterpoint, being out there for a couple of weeks over a few months, I got a sense of being in Ukraine and living in Ukraine and doing things that Ukrainian people would do. You know, I'd go to coffee shops and eat out of restaurants. I joined a gym. I felt a bit more of a part of it. I think I hadn't really processed the guilt about leaving. I think being back since sort of March, April, I probably feel more what you're feeling now, because I know Nadia and the team. I also have friends from the WHO who are going back out. And so whilst I was out there, I wasn't really thinking about this is all really bizarre. But hearing the news and knowing my friends were out there and knowing that Rivne, there'd been a strike in Rivne, and this is the second in a year and a bit. That's when I was like, oh, is everyone okay? But whilst I was there, I was like, okay, just crack on. It's a bizarre sort of juxtaposition.
Yeah, I think I can kind of relate to that. You know, my experience was very short term. It was a few days, but, you know, the sense of panic for people who weren't there and kind of concern for me was a lot higher than I had for myself, except in those moments where there was missile strikes and, you know, your life was in danger.
Yeah.
But I can't even begin to imagine what that's like to have that repeated.
I think it'd be good to ask Nadia about this, because Nadia, you've spoken about this in some of our earlier work about just, I suppose, getting yourself ready in the morning.
Дякую, Алістер. Хочу сказати, що дійсно дуже складно, коли особливо на початку, коли
Well, initially, I felt lost and confused when I first heard the sounds of explosion on the 21st of February last year. Our airport was attacked, and that was the first time when I had this experience of hearing blasts somewhere. There was a lot of confusion. I wish somebody would tell me what to do. Now that we're almost 2 years into the war, almost, I've think many grounding mechanisms were developed. So now I know what to do. I have a sort of routine, what you do first if you are unhurt. You check with your family, first and foremost, you make sure that they're all right. And that soothes you somewhat, even in an event of a missile or a drone attack. What's bizarre is that working as a psychologist in this hospital, it was hard for me to realize that some of the patients I talked to might actually know some of my family who are at the front line at the moment or serving in the military. That was something you had to get used to. But I guess I could take these thoughts and process them in various places, such as a support group that was organized at the beginning of the war by some US organization. Fortunately, I don't really remember the name of the organization, but that helps a lot. If you have these thoughts, you can process them there. Talking about more recent experience, Rivne was recently attacked, and it was an early morning, and I literally saw from my window the smoke that was rising from the place where from the places that were hit by the attack. I heard two explosions and then I saw the smoke. And I realized, and I was actually startled by my own reaction to it, it became sort of normal. I was pretty calm, and I was afraid of the way I reacted to this event. I don't know, maybe it was some kind of dissociation on my part. But yes, it was 27 in the morning. I had to go to work. So once I realized I'm okay, and I made sure that my family is okay as well, I just went about my routine. Because you go to work and you do things, and you're trying to keep track of things that are under your control. So this is the method, I guess, that I use for grounding.
Nadia, I wanted to ask, I mean, you'd said that you're about to qualify as a clinical psychologist. I suppose and my understanding is that you started your training during the war. How has training been for you as a psychologist in that context?
Насправді я маю вищу освіту з психології, тобто магістр психології.
Before I started working in this hospital, I've already qualified as a psychologist. I hold a master's degree in psychology, but our country is going through a major reform of the healthcare sector at the moment. And because I work in the healthcare institution, I need this qualification of a clinical psychologist. So that kind of prompted me to start training. And also on top of that, I won the Paul Kennedy Award that enabled me to do this training. I find training having quite a therapeutic effect on me, actually, because yes, it takes effort, but it's also rewarding. I also feel that my value as a professional is increasing, and it works in a way as a cognitive therapy for me.
I had a related question, Nadia, which was about neuropsychology. I mean, the focus of our podcast is around neurological conditions, around neuropsychological practice. Could you tell us a bit about how neuropsychology works as a specialty in Ukraine?
Дякую за запитання. Я також, крім клінічної психології, вивчаю зараз.
I think clinical psychology is on a good level in Ukraine, and now I'm also doing some training in a clinical neuropsychology thanks to the award that I've been given. So when it comes to children's rehabilitation, I think it can be commended. The services are good. When it comes to treating adult and rehabilitation of adults following stroke or other conditions, there is some private treatment that's available that people can go and seek privately. Now, when it comes to our center, rehabilitation and neurorehabilitation is a relatively new service that we've started offering, mostly due to lack of qualified staff. there haven't been many professionals in this field before, so this is quite new for us. But now we're developing new approaches in Ukraine for diagnostics, for example, and we develop new materials that help with this in Ukrainian, the so-called albums, and also some IT solutions that help us working with this population, specifically with language and speech disorders and language and speech therapy, because you get a lot of those conditions in the military that are coming to us.
Thanks, Nadia. I suppose as well, just to add a bit of context from the WHO side and the role that we're providing, some of the challenges are exactly as you'd expect in terms of what tests do you use to assess cognition, what norms are they based on, and how do you provide that sort of rehabilitation? So part of what we were doing is sort of exploring what was being used, but also buying in tests that might have been developed in Ukraine with Ukrainian norms. Also, Nadia and or her colleagues, some of them had come across from an educational psychology setting. So actually, there's a lot of tablet-based apps or rehabilitation techniques that we're using from that that I recognize as being trail-making test or a speed of processing sort of exercise. And for me, I was like, the adapting of stuff was really useful. Similarly, I will touch on the Paul Kennedy Scholarship a bit later on, but it felt really important that Nadia and her colleagues got access to clinical psychology training and neuropsychology training, because the largest group of people they're seeing are in the military. And you're looking at people who might be suffering with anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, pre or post outbreak. But also from a neuropsychology perspective, there is the TBI aspect. But there's also the potential that these guys have had TBIs in the past. There's also the potential that these guys have had alcohol-related brain damage over years, because that is one of the coping mechanisms that we've noticed is problematic. So I suppose it's trying to provide a bit of a holistic approach to what's going on, because a lot of the guys want to get back to the front line, but some of them don't, some of them can, and some of them can't.
It's a lot to think about in that, isn't there, Alistair? I wonder if you could say something about the Paul Kennedy Scholarship.
I'll briefly intro it, and then I'll let Nadia talk about what she's been doing over the last few months. So just circling back to what you mentioned about, I'm going to call it the guilt, but I'm going to call it the legacy. I suppose what I felt when I was out there is I only had a relatively short contract and I wasn't going to be able to do all of the things I wanted to do. Equally, I was thinking about when I was doing my clinical psychology training, my neuropsychology postgrad. We learned things over a long period of time. So I was trying to think about how we might be able to help Nadia and her colleagues access training over a longer period. Thankfully, after being linked in with Jane Duff at the Stoke Mandeville, she mentioned that there was a scholarship available via an international spinal cord injury society, the Paul Kennedy Award. So I spoke to Nadia about that, and we put in for that, saying, oh, actually, if we're able to do this, this will really benefit the team in Ukraine, because these are gaps in what I could provide and potentially what was also available in Ukraine. So yeah, I'll let Nadia talk about this, but over the last few months she's been accessing some training as a result.
Так, дякую. Дійсно, дуже цінною була ця можливість.
The Kennedy Scholarship was a great opportunity for me, because when I started working in the setting, I discovered that multidisciplinary team is something new, and there were few experienced colleagues who could guide me or answer my questions if I had them. But luckily, the WHO team, including Dr. Alistair, arrived soon after that. and he sent me a link to this award, and I applied. But of course, I had many questions which Alistair answered in detail. So with some help, I was awarded, and I was quite surprised. Actually, I did not expect I'd get it, but I did, and it really helped me in my work because I realized that was the place where I could get my questions answered. I started my training almost immediately after I found out that I have the scholarship, and at the moment I'm doing three courses, one in clinical psychology, another in clinical neuropsychology, and also a course on sexology. And I'm about to complete most of these courses, so that would come to fruition soon. Of course, it takes time, and it's not easy having my usual workload and training and some time for my private life as an individual. But this knowledge has transformed me already, and I see also how it impacted the work I do. I have changed the way I look at patient goals that we're setting with my patients. So yeah, that was a very helpful thing to have.
It sounds like you're on a fast track learning curve, Nadia.
It's fast indeed, and also dynamic, but I actually like learning things. It's not the first time that I had to combine several jobs, so I'm good at time management, I guess, and allocating my resources.
Yeah, and I suppose just to add from a scholarship perspective, a part of it is that Nadia had to have a mentor or mentors. So over the next sort of 12 months, with the benefit of my department, we're going to be providing some supervision sort of on a monthly basis. And that's going to be myself thinking more about the neuropsychology side of things and how we provide supervision and reflect on the theory. But then also my colleague, Charlotte Morgan, who works in our spinal cord injury service, she's going to also be providing supervision from the clinical psychology and the sex and sexuality side of things, because that's really important after SCI.
We plan to talk about cases, but I guess I've certainly arrived at is a set of questions about where next, Alistair. And I suppose, you know, you've talked a little bit about work that you've undertaken, about the legacy side of things, but I suppose I wondered about the role of neuropsychologists in the UK in responding to conflict elsewhere, because I guess at some point there was a pull, however that arrived at your doorstep, it pulled you into some work which was no doubt interesting and challenging, but I hope also helpful, and I assume you would conclude so. You know, if we are minded to help in terms of responding to conflict, what kinds of things do you think we ought to be considering, Alistair?
Yeah, so I suppose one of the going back to the start, the job landed in my email inbox because I was in touch with Stoke Mandeville from an SCI perspective. So I don't know how those jobs are sent out. My guess is they were sent out to National Spinal Cord Injury Centres and they put the feelers out. So I suppose from a neuropsychology perspective, how can we put ourselves forward to say this is our area of specialty? How can we help? There's obviously the BPS crisis, disaster and trauma side of things as well. And they do a great job in thinking about the emergency preparedness and responding to that side of things. But again, I'm not sure because it's really tricky because I found that I was involved in it and I knew what I was doing. But also there's lots of other, I suppose, similar charities, humanitarian organizations, all wanting to help. And I always found it difficult to know how that's coordinated. I think since coming back and with the current conflict in Gaza as well, more people have been reaching out to me to say, oh, how could I help with this? And I appreciate that I'm probably in the minority, so I'm being judged as an expert on how to do that. So I'm trying to say, oh, here's the WHO website or here's a contact, but I don't really know how we get in there, especially when it's a world organization. So I don't know if I'm answering the question particularly well, but I suppose I've become more culturally aware of my work and thinking about how to adapt my practice, and also the limitations of what we might do ordinarily with Western-based tests, thinking about working with the military, and I suppose adapting practice.
Thank you, Alistair. I mean, I wondered if I could ask Nadia the sort of flip side of that question, which is around if there were psychologists outside of Ukraine who wanted to help, what kind of guidance would you give people outside of Ukraine in terms of how they might offer help and support?
Дякую за запитання, хороше, дійсно.
It's a good question. Thank you. It's actually a good question. I think some of the frameworks that are used abroad could be of use to us here in Ukraine. But for example, I'm doing this course on clinical neuropsychology at the moment, and the trainer who works a lot with the military said that they were provided with some translated tests and also some software that could be used with gadgets, and that it's helpful. And it's being distributed now to some of the rehabilitation centers and clinics. But I guess if some of our colleagues in Ukraine already have it, they will share it in one way or another. So it's a tricky question because, you know, giving help is always much easier as opposed to thinking what you need help with.
Насправді, якось, коли треба надати допомогу, легше відповісти, ніж коли сказати так, що ви потребуєте.
Thank you. I guess some of these questions, there aren't straightforward answers. And I guess one of the things that struck me today is that conflict creates a layer of complexity. It's hard for us to understand the application of neuropsychology globally, Alistair, even in the most ordinary of circumstances. And I think some of the things that you've spoken to have been around the sort of cultural aspects that I guess are challenging alongside the conflict related aspects of your experience. I just wanted to thank you for your time. Cleena, I know you've got a bus to catch.
Not quite a bus, but
I don't know where you're going.
I've got a car to catch, Ingram, and de-ice.
So I want to thank you, Nadia, particularly for spending time with us today, and to Marina for translating, and Alistair for facilitating this connection. It's been wonderful talking to you, Nadia.
And congratulations on your qualification, Nadia.
Надія, я хотів вам подякувати особливо за те, що приділили нам час Марині за допомогою, і Алістер за те, що долучилися до нашої розмови. Кліна вітає вас із завершенням курсу.
Я дуже дякую за запрошення і за цю можливість вперше
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on the podcast. It's the first time I was a part of anything like that, which was a formidable challenge for me. But I hope that my answers provided some value to you, because to me, participating in a podcast was a huge support, actually, and an inspiration for the next steps.
Проте підтримуюче коло в першу чергу і певним чином надихаючи на майбутнє якісь кроки.
Thank you so much, Nadia.
Дуже дякуємо, Надія.